Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast,
we go right into it and we hit it hard. We want to guard you, we want to defend you, but we also want to pound the ball inside. It's a different type of offense where we're trying to go high low. We're looking for duck ends. It's a little bit backwards with regards to how people like to set go screens or things like that of that nature. You know, when we set a screen, we want to hit you.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish is by far the best shooting machine on the market, and if you are looking for a discount on a new machine, Rising Coaches code can get you $300 off of your new machine. For more information, visit drdishbasketball.com or visit one of their social media platforms at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities that may not be available anywhere else and only accessible to our members. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, you see him right here, Coach Jody Bailey, assistant coach from University of New Orleans. Coach, how are we doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thank you so much, Brian, for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on today and all you members listening and everyone on the podcast network listening. But, Coach, you know, tell us a little about yourself. Who are you? Why would I pick you, man? Share some love to us. Tell us your story here.
Well, I'm here at the University of New Orleans, and I'm assistant coach here with Mark Schlesinger. And this is going on, beginning my seventh season here. And really enjoyed working here at UNO and the staff and everybody. And prior to that, I was the head junior college coach in Texas at Jacksonville College in Jacksonville, Texas. I was head coach there. And then prior to that, I was at the University of Colorado working with Jeff Bezdelic as the director of operations. And then before that, I was at the Air Force Academy with Coach Bezdelic there. We had a great run there. And I've coached for a long time. I got my start years ago with a guy, his name is Denny Crum, and I started as his manager. And so I've had a good journey, really enjoyed it. And I've had a lot of fun stops along the way, different levels, high school, NAI, Division II, just different levels. And so it's been a fun, enjoyable experience. That's for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. We don't always get guys that have kind of worn every hat, not only in college basketball, but different levels of college basketball, the high school level, you know, even some NBA scout stuff. So tell us, you know, like, hey, you know, one or two things that you may have learned at those different levels. Like a lot of people want to be Division I assistants or work in the NBA or things like that. And you're kind of in one of those situations, you know, as sure. A D1 assistant and, you know, at a very good program. So tell us, you know, a little bit about, you know, some of those previous stops and maybe one or two things that you learned through those processes.
Well, I got my start years ago. My father was a head high school coach in Louisville, Kentucky for over 35 years at the same school. And I played a couple years of NAI ball. And at the end, I really struggled with defense. And because of that, you know, I had a long talk with my dad and I said, you know what, maybe I can just go and I can become a coach. My father was a coach and it was something I really wanted to do. And I got on with the University of Louisville, started as a manager over there and then worked my way up. But when I told my dad I want to coach, and my dad, he had an assistant spot on his varsity team. And I'm 20 years old. And he says, I tell you what, I want you to coach for me, but I want you to coach third and fourth graders and fifth and sixth graders. And he didn't allow me to be at the varsity practices. He wanted me to coach my third and fourth and fifth and sixth graders. And that was my team. And then when he had the varsity team play, I was his scout. And I actually went to opponents and I watched our opponents all season long because he wanted to find out if I was really serious about this coaching. And I would come back with detailed notes about this team or that team. But I was coaching jump stops and pivots and chest passes for third and fourth and fifth and sixth graders and working just on basic layups. And that's kind of how I got my start. And then from then on, I finished up at the University of Louisville, and I became a head high school coach in Montgomery, Alabama when I was 23. And we had a great run. We actually went all the way to the Alabama State Championship game. We lost in the championship game, but we had a fun run. And then from there, I went to an NAIA school in New Albany, Indiana, at Indiana University Southeast. And then from Indiana University Southeast, I was assistant coach at Kentucky Wesleyan with Ray Harper. We actually won a national championship there, so that was fun. And so when you talk about advice to coaches that are trying to get in, you know, you have to do what you can do. Number one, it's first thing is a fit to try to be with the right people. And that's hard to find because you really don't know people that well. So you have to get some really great intel. You have to get some great advice from people, and you have to listen. And then the second thing is you got to be willing to do whatever it takes and do all the little things. And also sometimes it's minimal pay. So we won a national championship at Kentucky Wesleyan but I got paid $3,000 for the entire year. When I was in IU Southeast, now this is going to sound crazy, Brian. Listen to this. I was at IU Southeast. I'm coaching NAI ball, and I made $250 for the entire year. So, you know, you have these type of experiences in your life. It's like, that's what you got paid? Like, yeah, really, that's exactly what I got paid. And I thought I made it big time when I landed an NAI assistant job in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I got paid $18,000. And I was just like, wow, I'm just rich. And then they provided an apartment for me. So I was just like, I'm loving it.
That's awesome. Yeah, we all have those stories of our quote unquote grind or our tough times. You know, my freshman year as a manager, I made more money than you. I as a scholarship, I got $450 as a freshman. But oh, wow. Looking back on it, you know, I've done the same thing in terms of, you know, going different levels and sacrificing and doing things, left two full-time jobs for lesser pay to basically get a higher title, either assistant coach in the title or, you know, in this situation came here. I left that director of operations title to be an assistant again and then became a head coach at a JUCO level. You mentioned a little bit about your time at Jacksonville. You were a junior college head coach. And I think sometime down the line, you're going to have an opportunity to be a head coach again. And with that, like, talk about that jump from JUCO head coach to going back to being an assistant, you know, because you go from making a ton of decisions and you go from being the guy that, you know, everyone's coming into your office and you're taking care of anything and everything, thousand decisions that you're making decisions on the sidelines. And then you went back. That was 18 inches, the different direction. Talk a little bit about that transition and how being a JUCO head coach or being a head coach in general prepared you to be a better assistant.
Well, I think the first thing when you talked about, you're right about the decisions that you're making as a head coach. And now then as assistant, you're making suggestions. And so I'm suggesting to Mark, our head coach, Mark Schlesinger, I'm suggesting things to him of what I see, of what I think we should do, what we shouldn't do. But at the end, it's his call and it's his team. And I understand that. And, you know, when you're a head coach, and you've done a head coaching, you know, I was a head coach in junior college for 5 years. I was a head high school coach for 3 years in Montgomery, Alabama, and also in Atlanta, Georgia, high school coaching there. And so, you know, when you do this, you start to accumulate your thoughts, your ideas of how a program should be run. And then when you transition and you go from to be an assistant coach, it's like, okay, this is another area of something that I never thought of with regards to how coach wants. And it's like, you know, the ball still got to go in the hole, but there's different ways of the ball to go in the hole. And so those are things. And then the daily day operations of what we do here, you know, and it's like, that sounds like that. I might not do that if I ever become a head coach again, but I probably will do this. And it's, you start, putting things in the basket cart, so to speak. So you're going down the grocery aisle and you're at Walmart and you're like, well, we got to get this. And so as an assistant coach, you're sitting there going down the aisles and you're like, oh, I really like what we do here. This is a great idea. I really like this. Just pick something, pregame warm-up, or what we do in the off season, or how we handle recruiting. And it's like, you're going down the shopping aisle. Yep, I want some of that. I want some of that. And then you also have your own decisions of, because of where you've been, the other spots that you've worked for. It's like, okay, I prefer something else. But that's okay. That's part of coaching. That's part of life. And as you get older, you start to realize, you know, what's best for you.
For sure. That's couldn't be more accurate on that right there. As you grow and you develop and you kind of figure out who you learn more about who you are as a person, like we think we know. And then we look back 3 years ago and we're not the same person. We've continued to grow and develop and become quote unquote better. Talk a little bit about your experiences at UNO. So you guys have had, you know, pretty good success. You had a lot of injuries the last couple of years, I know. Yes. I've been following you guys and, you know, you're in the Southland Conference that's kind of had a lot of shift lately. I've watched you guys practice. I've watched you guys scrimmage. We've had a couple of close scrimmages even on our campus. And I have my top assistant on our staff, Corey Schmidt, used to work at UNO. So I kind of know a lot of different things that you guys have done in your program. My favorite part about watching your practice was you yelling the word loose at the top of your lungs. And anytime there's a loose ball or something, talk a little bit about that and maybe some of the experiences you've had at UNO, what you've learned or that you guys do different. You know, maybe philosophy wise, you guys really pack it in. You've always been really physical, you know, things like that. Go ahead.
We play to our strengths. So our strengths is we want to be the hardest working team. We want to be the blue collar team. We're coming with a lot of physicality. It's not finesse. We don't want to play a finesse type of game on either end. We want to be the bully on the block, so to speak. And we want to come with force. And because of that way, we practice, you know. So this morning, you know, we had practice at 6:30 this morning. And so I've been here. I got here at 5:30. And so we've gone all day. And you know, we'll also, after we practice, we'll have meetings. We'll do different things throughout the day. And then we bring our players back for about a 30-minute short window of, okay, maybe it's a skill session. Maybe it's a film session. But maybe it's going through zone offense for 30 minutes or underneath out of bounds plays, sideline out of bounds plays. And then they go lift with our strength coach. So from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, there's our window in the afternoon to just hit them with something. And a lot of people don't do what we do. A lot of people don't practice at 6:30 morning, and a lot of people, they do it differently, and that's okay. And so, you know, when you go through this, it's like you hear different people, they do this, this is how they practice. You know, we go right into it and we hit it hard. We want to guard you. We want to defend you. But we also want to pound the ball inside. It's a different type of offense. Where we're trying to go high low, we're looking for duck ins. It's a little bit backwards with regards to how people like to set go screens or things like that of that nature. You know, when we set a screen, we want to hit you. And so that's kind of where we are. And you spoke earlier about loose. Probably if you come to our practices, you'll hear me say it. When we feel like when the shot goes up in the air, it's going to hit the rim. You know, the ball's in the air, the ball is loose, and we're trying to win that battle, the rebound battle, whether it's offense or defense. And then whenever the ball is on the floor, we're all hollering loose. And our players, because you keep saying it so much, you keep saying it over and over again, you know, then they're saying it. You have players say it, and then, like, they become desperate to try to win that ball, whether the ball's in the air or the ball's on the ground.
I love that. And, you know, my assistant every once in a while will yell it. And I was listening to another podcast, now that we're going to plug another one, but Basketball Immersions podcast with Ben McCollum, the coach at Northwest Missouri, won 3 of the last 4 national championships at Division II level. He's unbelievable. And but he's the king of those ghost screens. But he has a terminology. He said that, you know, the first few months of the season, they really focus on transition defense. And within that transition defense, it's about that little second delay when the shot goes up that people stare and they watch. So you saying the term loose, like it kind of cleans up some of that with in terms of, hey, the shot's going up. Everyone knows they don't have that delay. They don't have that thought process. They just go and they go to where they're supposed to be, whether it's, you know, to the elbows, whether it's crash, whether it's go weak side, whether it's get back in transition, whatever that is. And I think that's a good terminology that is simple, is a one syllable and a one syllable word. And it's something that you guys do a really good job with.
Yeah.
Being at New Orleans, you guys have core values within your program that you guys kind of preach regularly.
You know, it goes back to what I said earlier with regards to the toughest team. We talk about that, the toughness aspect. And I mean, when you talk about core values, we it goes back to we control our attitude and our effort. And that's something we really do preach daily. And so those are the two main things is attitude and effort. And then we want to be, we call it TTW, toughest team wins. And we want to be the toughest team. Whenever we step out on the court, we feel like through toughness is also through so many different variables, as you know, whether it's even in defensive transition, it's hard. It's tough to outrun your opponent. And so that's one of those deals that, you know, with regards to core values. And another one is just, you know, our availability. So our players push through, you know, we have a thing that's like, you know, when someone goes down, just imagine, and this sounds backwards, but it's like, you know, a player goes down with an injury, you know, or he twists his ankle or something small, you know, we just go, okay, here we go. We're on the next court. And we just keep practicing. And then eventually what happens is, you know, those players like, well, I don't want to miss out because they're competing. And, you know, we don't all 10 of us run down there. Hey, are you okay? You know, it's like, no, we're on the next court. Let's go. And the trainers will take care of all that stuff. And so we're just trying to be the toughest team. And we're trying to, you know, by doing that over and over again in the everyday, it's an everyday deal. That availability, then the players in their mindset, it's like, well, I can't miss today. And it kind of like just happens. Osmosis.
There you go. There you go. They're going to become instinctually tougher by being around tougher human beings and what you hold as a standard. You know,
it's kind of like organically it happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you just keep doing things over and over again. And eventually it's like, it just happens.
That's great. Yeah. We talk about those controllables a lot too, in our program. We've used the terminology toughen together. It's kind of been our little theme this year.
That's good.
It's not technically our core values, but toughen together, you know, just having that instilled toughness and how we hold them accountable with value driven and celebrate those behaviors. So when you do see it, you celebrate. It's fun. But we talk about those controllables, your focus, your attitude, your communication, your effort, the acronym FACE. And we talk about it and show them pictures in our locker room and things like that. So I love that about your program. So I know you're a man of high character and especially of faith. And if anyone follows you on any social media platform, I've thoroughly enjoyed the different things that you put up there. But they're not always your quote unquote stereotypical coach type stuff. It's very rare, actually, if you see those types of things. So, you know, tell us a little bit about what you do. I mean, you can see in the background, you can see a bunch of artwork by your kids back there. Just tell us a little. Well, that's not your artwork. I don't really know. I mean, you never know what you're doing at work.
Yeah. So, you know, it sounds nuts, but I've got two boys, and yep. I'm just a, you know. You're not supposed to be prideful, but I'm very proud of my sons. I'm very thankful for them. God gave them to me. I don't shy away from my Christianity. I am a Christian and I am a believer in Jesus. And but I don't shy away from that. But I'm also not going to throw it and put the full court press on you. And you know, throughout all my journeys, you know, we mentioned some of them. And when I was coaching NAI ball in Chattanooga, Tennessee, probably some of the worst spots to sit in a gym or one or two spots. It's directly behind a bench because the bench is always standing, or the top row of a bleacher. Those sometimes aren't the best spots to sit in. And I'm coaching any eyeball, and I saw this girl behind our bench after a timeout. And I'm sitting there going, man, who is that? And I met her after the game, met her at the three-point line, and she's now my wife. And she's been with me throughout all these journeys. And we've got two children. One is Jay Lawrence, and we adopted Jay Lawrence. We got him day two out of Florida. When my wife and I were trying to have a baby, did everything we could. And, you know, unfortunately, we lost one. And so the doctor said, hey, you probably, you know, it's going to be hard for you guys to have a child. And so we went straight into adoption. We got an adoption. And in Florida, we were living in Colorado. I was coaching at Air Force in Colorado during that time. And we worked out the adoption, and we got it out of Florida, got him out of Florida. In Florida, the laws are it's 2 days for the mother to change her mind. Each state's different. It's really unique. So in Kentucky, it's 6 months. The mother can change her mind. In Texas, it's 6 months. In Colorado, it's 8 months. And in Florida, it's 48 hours. And so we adopted our son, Jay Lawrence. And then a few years later, God gave us a gift with Jackson Steele. And he's six now. Jay Lawrence is 12. And so the artwork behind me, I got some great artists, and I love them. You talked about some things that I do put on social media. When I go and I travel, whether it's recruiting or a road game or what have you, my wife, she puts like 3x5 cards and just like different ones, and just she puts them in my bag. And sometimes she doesn't tell me at all where she puts them. And I'm going through and I'm pulling out my shoes or socks. And then there's just a card that's like encouraging. I'm like, man, I needed that. And so I put it on social media. And this was years ago when all this stuff started happening, Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff. And she put something on me, and it was a really good card. I was like, wow, that was really good. And so I put it out there. Hey, this is a great one. And this was like years ago. I put it out there. Joyce gave me this one. Well, I started to get texts and phone calls from my former players or assistant coaches or coaches that I knew, like, JB, man, that was so good. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm sitting there going, wow, I didn't realize that people liked it, and they didn't, you know, it hit them differently. And then I started getting texts and calls from my former players like, JB, we haven't seen a card lately. Or we, you know, can you put something out? And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is like, you know, and I told Joy this, she's like, okay, well, I'll just do it all the time. And so every time we go somewhere, I got stacks of 3x5 cards that I'm just like, oh, wow, that's really good. And I just like, well, somebody may need that. And that's kind of what I do. I just kind of share something, and it's, you know, it may not be an out of bounds play. I may just share something. It's a little bit different, and it may just be something that somebody needs for that day, that moment. And it's a little thing, but it sometimes we just need a little bit of somebody telling us, hey, attaboy or attagirl, you can make it through just this day. And sometimes we go through the struggles of different things in our lives, whether it's coaching, family, what have you, you know, and so that's kind of where that all transpires from. And going back to earlier also, sorry, so I'm speaking too long, making this long story longer. I couldn't have made all these moves without my wife. I mean, she was 1,000% behind me when I said, well, this is what I do. I go recruiting. You know, and I explained to her, well, you know, September we go recruiting, and then in April we go recruiting, and in July we go recruiting, you know, and then you do all this stuff, and it's like, you know, she's like, okay, that sounds great. And, you know, some wives aren't as supportive, and sometimes it's tricky, but I'm, you know, I love my wife, and I'm so thankful, and I'm blessed that she allows me to have, you know, a job that I love. Are you kidding me? That I get to coach this game of basketball? This is such fun, and I get to have fun with it.
Yeah, we forget that, and a lot. You know, so our our worst days are still better than a lot of people's best days because of the impact and the ability that we get to be able to coach and basically play a game all day long and talk to other people. And it's not, like you said, the out of bounds plays, but how you can make a difference in other people's lives, whether it's through an index card, a quote, a Bible verse, whatever it is, you know, you're able to impact others, and they don't become reliant on it, but they remember it. And it's a really good conversation, start checking in type thing. A lot of people, oh, how you doing? Checking in on you. I mean, now, hey, you're bringing value, and you're bringing memorable value. And that's, you know, I always see it. And, you know, I always think about you often because of that. And I'll see good ones, or I'll see different things. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, one of the reasons why I've continued to reach out to you in different things, not only because of who you are, but because of who you stand for and who you are as a person. And, you know, not just a basketball coach. Like, we don't even need anything, and now we're talking on a regular basis.
Right. And that's, no, and that's what's fun, because in the end, I mean, let's be honest, B. I mean, you know, the Bible says that, hey, good name is more important, you know, than gold. And it's true. I mean, like, who we are is our character, and who we are as a person, as humans, and that's all we have. I mean, there are no do-overs, unfortunately. And so we've got one chance, and I only get one chance to inspire people. To, you know, whatever it is, now, whatever it is, it may, you know, and so on. I've got to be inspirational. In your job, you got to be inspirational. You got to help your players, and those players I know, because I know how you are. Those are your boys, and I know how you are, and how you treat them, and how you coach them, all that stuff, because it's so important to you, you know. And it's like, and especially at the JUCO level, I mean, like. I mean, think about it. I mean, like, it's like you've got a clicker in your hand and you're pushing the pause button and you're trying to convince them, hey, all we've did right now is we just pushed the pause button on the clicker of your life. Pretty soon, when you finish and graduate from junior college, we're going to hit the play button. And so a lot of kids, because let's be honest, I mean, when they're 12 years old, they really don't dream about JUCO, and they didn't dream about NEI, or they didn't dream about Division II. And I've coached at those levels, and so it's like, you know, hey, it's okay. Just keep dreaming. You never know what can happen.
There's a lot of good basketball out there, and we use that in recruiting a lot. Hey, you know, JUCO's not the point. It's used as a stepping stone to get you to where you want to be, and your future's nothing to gamble with. You know, all those types of things that, you know, you utilize the year or 2 years that you're in a certain program and get you to where you really want to be. You mentioned recruiting a few times, you know, talk about the value base in terms of your relationship and being able to go and recruiting at a junior college level, going from JUCO to Division I. Obviously, you have to be a good recruiter to make that transition. Talk a little bit about some of the recruiting strategies that you've had and kind of developed over time. You don't have to spell your secrets, but give us, you know, a little bit of recruiting advice in terms of things that you've done, or maybe something that's unique to Jody Bailey.
I think in the end, you have to be honest with the parents and the players and the coaches, whether that's the AAU coach, the high school coach, or the personal trainer, what have you, of that individual player. And you have to be really honest and really real with them. In fact, it's like sometimes it's, you know, you got to play the rook card early. So then they know, okay, he's playing the rook card. And so that card's already been dealt, and they know up front, you know, your honesty and what you're trying to convey. And I think in the end, if you don't get that player, because a lot of times we don't get that player, and we do swing and miss. It's a part of recruiting, and it's hard, and you can get discouraged, and it can get frustrating. You want this player, and this player goes over here. And you shake your head. It's like, doesn't he realize we've got a better situation over here? So it's hard. You have to, you know, empty your personal head trash. You know, Tuesdays and Fridays are trash days, but you have to empty your personal head trash constantly by saying, okay, just keep calling, keep texting. And, you know, and sometimes kids, you know, they don't really want to know. They don't really care about just coming out and just saying, well, hey, you fit our style of play. You know, they've heard that one. kids have heard, hey, you fit our style of play. Well, okay, they've all heard that one. What do they really need to hear? They really need to hear at the end of the day that you're going to love, serve, and care for them. And that's the bottom line, you know, and you're going to do that, whether that's helping them with their jump shot, helping them with their major, trying to figure out their major, helping them by giving them advice when, okay, you come to our city and you need to get an oil change. Here's where you need to go get an oil change in your car. You know, there's things like that that you got to help them with throughout every step along their personal four-year journey. And, well, as you know, it might not be 4 years with all the stuff that's happening in our profession now. But if you only get them for 1 year, you got to help them so much so that they realize, man, JB loved me, he served me, he cared for me, and that's all you can ask.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of that comes, you know, through that trust and transparency that you talked about, you know, from the beginning. And I think that helps. You know, you guys haven't had a lot of transfers there, and that is probably done on the front end because you know what type of kids you guys can recruit, who your head coach can coach, and you're transparent with expectations, standards, and you're going to track kids that are like you guys rather than, you know, trying to head on, try and get the best quote unquote players. You're getting the best fits for you on both ends. And, you know, that's why, you know, you see so many transfers in today's modern age because they listen and get fooled a little bit. So,
okay. So here's a great, so I may like a player, and I've done this early on. I'm like, Mark, this kid really can help us. We got to recruit this kid. And it's like, wait a minute. Can he play for my coach?
Yep.
And that's a pretty important, when you're going back and asking some questions, okay, can this player play for my head coach? And can he play a lot for my head coach? Because those are like, you can eliminate a lot of kids. So, for instance, I coached at the Air Force Academy. Well, not everybody can get in the Air Force. You have to be appointed. You know, you have to take 22. How about this one? You got to take 22 hours every semester at the Air Force Academy. You know, so not everybody can do the Air Force. Okay, well, also not everybody can do and play for, you know, your coach or my coach. And so then you have to make sure as a recruiter, as a coach, as assistant coach, you're like, okay, if I bring this kid to the table, it's like, okay, I know in my heart that he can play for us. That's one thing. But can he play for my head coach? Yeah, he's Division I. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, but is he going to? What's he going to be like at 6:30 in the morning?
Definitely. Do you make recruiting trips at 6:30 in the morning, start knocking on doors and see if they're built for it?
Hey, I tell you what. I've been on some early morning practices, and I personally love it because it's fun. You know, you get those practices up early, and some of them they're doing different things, and you see a lot of kids, you know, they're not used to that early morning stuff. And so it's like, you know, everybody wants to be D1, but they're not D1, as you know.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll never forget when Tubby first came to Minnesota and I was working for him. We practiced the first like year and a half, almost 2 years, I think, at that 6 a.m. And then it kind of, as the season went along, it became like a 7 a.m. But we would meet an hour before, and I would have to run on the board. But I was a student. You didn't have like parking. You're in a city. And so I had to walk from my dorm room, and it's like negative something degrees at 5:30 in the morning to a gym. And I'm like, I'm walking, and my face is so cold between buildings, and the wind hits you. And, you know, I think that 6 o'clock made me a little tougher. It made me not as phased when anything happens to you. So,
we talk about toughest team wins. Hey, I'm a softie when it comes to weather. I don't like it cold.
You live in some nice places now. You said Colorado, which is nice. Florida, yeah. Texas, New Orleans is, other than being underwater all the time, it's a pretty nice place to live.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Oh, good. I got a couple rapid fire, you know, ultimate questions, I call them.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious to see, you know, what you got up your sleeve with these ones. But what lessons has it taken you the longest to learn? You're now, you know, an older coach. So you've been a head coach, you know, What are the lessons that have taken you the longest to learn?
To let go of resentment and to let go of disappointments. When people disappoint you, things disappoint you. You can't hold on to resentment. You can't hold on to bitterness. You know, because then you have that battle inside of you for so long, and you take that home, and your wife's making meatloaf, but the whole time you're sitting there eating meatloaf, and you're thinking about a decision that really you have to let go, whether it's a coaching decision, recruiting decision, something we did in practice, something we didn't do or we should do. And you have to just let go of things more, because if not, you're just going to build up personal inner walls within yourself.
Yeah, just
that's
build.
Probably that's probably not what you were like looking for, but that's
no, it's you, it's your question. But you know, to kind of play off that, our profession is so cutthroat, and it's not really it's not fair. And you see a lot of different things, and it's easy to get bitter.
Yes.
It's hard to continue to get better. And as I've gotten older, I would say kind of a similar thing, like the process has become more valued and I kind of understand it more instead of, you know, climb, this. And I think that it just takes time, and it's easy to say it now. It's easy to tell our 18-year-old, 21-year-old guys like X, Y, Z, but you got to live it and, you know, teach them and continue to preach that.
And also you sit there and go through it. And when we get this, so the resentment of, or you have bitter feelings of frustrations, disappointments, you know, you're friends with a coach, he gets a job, you're sitting there going, you've told your wife, hey, if he gets this job, he might call me. Well, in the end, he doesn't call you, you know, and you have that throughout. I mean, it's just like, oh, it's right there. And you see these stories at the Final Four and you're like, hey, yeah, I'm a finalist. I'm a candidate. All that stuff. Nah, not really.
Everyone's got a story. Everyone's got a guy. And then when it comes to hire him, it doesn't usually happen. You can only hire one or two or three. Give me one thing that you believe in that other people may think is weird.
Okay. I press after a miss.
Okay. Like a jam and outlet type thing.
Yeah. Okay. Basketball wise. You know, I'm a presser. I work for Denny Crum, and we pressed at Louisville 2-2-1 all the time. And then my father is a high school coach. He pressed all the time. When I coached high school ball and junior college ball, in junior college, we pressed the entire game. And it's absurd, and it's high risk, high reward. It's also high letdowns. And you can get burned. I love pressing. I love pushing the tempo. I love that stuff. And a lot of people, when they press after a make or dead ball foul, ball's out of bounds, foul on number 22 in the white. We're going to take it out of bounds. Well, then teams put the press on. So I've seen that stuff. But the one that I love the most, I love to press after a miss. And you have to really train that one. That one's tricky. But what happens is, just like anything, okay, you're putting in your early break, your transition, your Carolina break, or what have you. And it's, okay, our two-man, he's running on the right side. Our three-man's on the left side. First big down, he's sealing all the way down. We're pushing the ball up the court. Well, when you start taking off, it's the reverse effect. Here comes the press. And sometimes – what you'll find out, and I think you'll understand this, there's not too many John Stocktons or Alonzo Balls or great passers that can see the court. And sometimes you can trip them up by pressing after a miss.
There you go. I like it. Outside the box thinking. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to not necessarily get off your chest, but you want to share with our Rising Coaches community here?
Well, you know, you guys at Rising Coaches, y'all are doing something that's just phenomenal. And Adam, you know, everything that Adam and his team and y'all, what y'all are pouring into the resources to help coaches. And for old coaches, young coaches, it doesn't matter. You're trying to help all of us. And I think that's fantastic. And I would just also, tell these coaches, you're wanting to do the things that at a Division I or a higher level, you just got to keep plugging away, keep doing the little things. You've got to figure out how to stand out. It's just like when you're watching an AAU game, a kid that takes a charge, you're sitting there going, hey, he took a charge, because it kind of stands out. There's things you have to do to figure out how to stand out in the crowd. And so I would just encourage those young coaches to just, keep pushing forward and to, you never know what can happen. You never know who knows who.
Stay ready. You always got to stay ready. Like you tell your bench player, you just got to stay ready. You never know. All right, last question for you. What is something that we can do as human beings listening to this podcast in the next 24 hours and take action? Challenge us. Give us some type of thing that we can take action.
I think, there's a really good Bible verse that says in Matthew, it says, whoever wants to be a leader must be a servant. And you have to have a servant heart in every aspect of what you want to do. And if you really want to be that next leader, you got to keep being a servant and you got to keep serving people. I have to do a better job of serving my boss. I have to also serve our assistant coaches. I have to serve our players. The more you serve, in due time, it's all going to take care of itself. And don't know when. And then also, the last thing is this one. I'm sorry, I've gone too long. But everybody's journey is different. And so, some people, they're all journeys are different. Like I remember reading about John Beilein and his journeys and all his spots, how he's been a head coach at every spot. And he was an assistant coach. He was just a head coach of D3, head coach, JUCO, all that stuff. And then it just happens. And then some people, they don't ever get a chance to be a head coach, and that sometimes that happens. But you have to just keep serving others. I would tell your listeners, hey, just keep loving people and love everybody.
Yeah, sacrifice equals reward. Yes. Sacrifice equals reward.
I like and that.
Humility leads the way, baby. It leads the way. And I appreciate you coming on today and speaking on your journey and your story and sharing wisdom with us. And just keep plugging away. It's always good, to hear different perspectives, but also from good people that genuinely care and are not bitter, that want to get better, that care about others first. And that's who you are. So appreciate you being on, and appreciate everybody for listening.
Thank you.